Hey everybody, we're going to get started now. Thank you all for coming and welcome back to the afternoon sessions of the RFA Kala. Rabbi Kenneth Brander, Vice President for Student and Community Life at Yeshiva University, will be speaking on the topic of archaeological finds, illuminating Tanakh and Halakha.
Sorry, do you want to do anything?
Take this opportunity to thank Tama and Aryeh and so many others who put this together, this wonderful REIT-CJF program. It's a wonderful opportunity for us. It's a wonderful opportunity for us to be able to share Torah with you. And it's very difficult because when they came to me and they, you know, and the lineup wasn't yet finished, but they said that, you know, you're going to be sort of saying competition with Rabbi Simon or Rabbi Schechter or someone like that. You're asking yourself, like, you know, why do you want to be in competition with somebody you want to go hear this year? So I figured I have to do something that would be much different than the shiurim that they would give. And I figured I would, since the focus is on Inyanei Eretz Yisrael, I figured what I would do is I would focus on the whole idea of Har HaBayit or the area surrounding Har HaBayit, namely the issue of the Old City and different components of it. Now, admittedly, we have a lot more to talk about than we can do in 40 minutes or so. So this is just a tease. If there are any questions about any other pieces, if I have some ability to answer them, it would be my pleasure to do so. If not, I can always get back to you. So there are two sets of handouts for everybody. The first set of handouts are the Makoros. Those have the fancy introductory sheet on it. And the other set of Makoros are the slides. They're a little hard to see on your handout, except I thought it'd be, if you want to take some notes on the slides, we're going to show the slides. But this way you have them in front of you, and I'm making the chama that we're going to put on YU Torah, not just the shiurim PowerPoint, not just the makoros, but we'll also put the PowerPoint on there. So if you want to keep the whole PowerPoint, if you want to take the whole PowerPoint, feel free to use it. Feel free to just, you know, cut and paste it and make your own class out of it. It would be my privilege and pleasure. So I think the way we're going to handle this is we're going to go through a few of the slides, and then we're going to go through the makoros that are connected with them, or some of the selected makoros that are connected to them. So this is the Southern Wall. By a show of hands, how many people have been to the Southern Wall? Hopefully most of you. Great. The Southern Wall has actually two sets of gates. It has three gates that were used to enter into the Beit HaMikdash, and two gates to exit. And the reason why there are three to enter is because people basically came on time. Therefore, you needed several gates to enter. And the reason why there are two is because not everyone left at the same time. So in our shuls, it would be reversed. You'd need just two to enter and three to exit. But there are three, and the three that are entry gates are found. This is the south, this is the west. This is south. This is what they're found in the southeastern corner, and the gates to exit are found in the southwest corner of the wall. You would enter into the gates, and you would actually go beneath ground, and then enter into the temple plaza right over here. This building is important. We'll discuss it in a few minutes also. It is what's called, in Talmudic terms, the Hanut, the store. And the reason why it was called the store is for two reasons. It was one of the places in which you could switch money in order to be able to buy karbanos. Because, you know, if you lived close by, if you lived in, you know, Gush Etzion or something like that, and there are actually wells that you see on the way, so you could bring your animals with you. But if you lived, let's say, in Washington Heights, right, you couldn't always bring your animals with you. So the bottom line is, you would purchase animals, you know, close to the temple region, and if you had different forms of cash, you'd be able to switch those forms of cash. So this was called the chanut, the store, and again, it has halachic components to it also.
Were the libations, etc., at the same place? The kupot for the chassim, was that also?
No, the kupot for the chassim and stuff like that were actually over here. We'll get to it. And the libations were actually not ones that individuals did. Those were normally what we'd call communal offerings, and therefore it came from a different kupa. It came from a different different funds. Okay? Those were part of your half shekel and things of that nature. Okay? So you would enter this way. You would walk the Temple Mount. You would walk in this path. Start here. Walk around this way. If you walked a different path, people would ask you questions. They would say, why are you walking differently? And one of the people that would walk differently is somebody who is in the midst of observing a loss. And they would say to you, Misha Shachem B'Bayit Zeh, the person who lives in this house, who he should comfort you. That's why, by the way, we use the language HaMakom Yinachem Etchem. Why don't we use Hashem Yinachem Etchem or something like this, HaMakom? Because it comes from the root in the Mishnah, Misha Shachem B'Bayit Zeh. What did I just do? Aryeh, what did I do? When I press that button. Misha Shachem B'Bayit Zeh, the person who lives in that house, the location, HaMakom, Hu Yinachem Otcha. He should comfort you. Okay? Now, if we want to just look at this from a more practical perspective, this is what it looks like right now. And over here are the two exit gates. They're pretty much stuffed. They're pretty much cut up. They're pretty much covered by ruins that were, or by buildings that were built after the second base of Midrash was destroyed. And actually, if you've looked at this carefully, you'll notice there's a little stone over here that's backwards. That stone was actually in honor of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash for Titus. And at some point in time, when the Romans lost the area, they rebuilt these areas by different fragments. They wanted to poke fun at Titus, so they put the stone in, but they actually put it in reverse. So it's graffiti that actually makes a comment. Next time you're at the Southern Wall, please God soon, you will see right above this, you will see that stone, and you will notice that it's backwards, and just know that it's not because you have any vision challenges, but rather it was done on purpose. So this would be the southwest corner, or the close to the west corner, and over here you would find more of the southeastern corner where they entered in. Now, just to give you a better understanding of this area, I want to point out not all of these things, or else we're never going to get past the Southern Wall. Here are the double gates we talked about. Here are the triple gates that we talked about. And there's a lot of stuff that had been found since then. So for example, this is a mistake. This is not the large mikveh used by the priests. These are the large mikvahs that were used. These were mikvahs used before they went into the Beis HaMikdash. Notice most of the mikvahs are found on this side, not on this side. Although there are some. Most of them I find here. What do you think that is? Why? Or to avoid the people who just left, who may be impure, and this is your way up. So it's closer to your triple gates than it is to your descending double gates. Okay? This is important. We'll get to it hopefully soon. But, you know, you see courthouses, you see a few other things, but I would like to just focus on the Torah components. And then we're going to get back to over here also. We're going to get back to some areas over here also. But again, the double gate and that triple gate. Now, what's interesting to note is that for those of you who've been by the double gate, you'll notice that the steps are on purpose. They don't fulfill the American Disabilities Act. They're not equal steps. There are short steps and there are long steps. And what's interesting is you can still see the steps from the second base of Mikdash. How many people have seen this? Right? You can see this. So the question I'd like to just pose first is, why are they not measured equally? Why are they on purpose? You know, you have again a short one, this is a very long one, a short one, a long one, etc., etc. What's interesting is, although these stairs by the gates of departing the base of Mikdash are, I don't want to say pretty much intact, but for 2,000 years old. They look good. They should say that about me in 2,000 years, right? They look great. But on the entrance to the we have no real remnant steps. They've actually been, as you can see, rebuilt. Why is it that the steps had no wear and tear, so to say, over here, but all wear and tear by the three entry gates where there are no steps left whatsoever? And that is also an important halachic issue. Because when you went into the Beis HaMikdash after you went to the mikvah, you wanted to make sure that there was nothing that would affect your ritual purity. These steps were therefore built on arches. We don't have time to go into all the halakhic issues, but the idea is, since they were built on arches, what would happen is, the arches, if there was anything impure below the arch, the tumah would be chotzeitz, would end with the arch, and therefore not affect the people walking on the steps. So therefore, since those steps entering into the Beis HaMikdash were specifically made in a way that they prevented any Jew from contracting tumah from the mikvah to this area, and they are built on arches, so after 2,000 years, when the arches collapse, the steps collapse. The descending steps were not built on arches. They were built on rock. And therefore, those steps still remain. Okay? Now let's look at some of the halakhic sources. Let me just point out one other thing, and that is, this is an example of one of the mikvahs that was found. You actually can see the wall in the background, the wall that we've been talking about. Notice the descending and ascending component are different sets of steps, and that is to make sure that the people going down were not the people touching the people who, or the people going up didn't touch people going down. Now, I know this doesn't look like there's a major wall here, but again, keep in mind this is at least 2,000 years old. Our walls, you know, don't look this good after 2,000, at least I can talk to you about ones in my house. Don't look. I got a lot of YU students in my house. They don't look this good after a semester. So the bottom line is that this was set in the way so that people who went into the mikvah and the people who exited the mikvah didn't in any way touch each other or could no longer touch each other to create a problem. Yes?
If you bring in a karban, did it come up with you, or is that a separate entrance?
So no, the karbanot would come up with you. You would buy them beforehand, and there were certain karbanot that you would actually could buy on the Beit HaMikdash. So the entrance you would go in for the karbanot wasn't, you might go in through the south. There were multiple entrances. We're going to look at the gates when we do the makorot in a minute. But you would, normally the entrance for the karbanot wasn't really from the south. You would go around, let me just point to it. You would actually enter in this way for karbanot, because that's where the kohanim were ready to do the shechita. The shechita would happen inside here. Right over here. And that's where you would go. So you might walk in with this, bring your karban, and then you would bring it here. But there were other gates. You see the arches, Wilson's arch, other arches on the western wall, which are Robinson's arch and other arches. Those arches allowed you to enter in from either the lower city, normally what we call Ir David or Silwan, which was the original city, or the upper city, which was the more aristocratic city where the Kohanim lived. Okay? Let's now look at some of the Makoros, okay? So that we can root some of this stuff that we just learned. The first page of Makoros is just there to give you a little bit of an overview of a brief history of Yerushalayim and the Temple Mount. Okay? We're not going to do that. That's just for yourself. Let's look at Midos Mishnah Aleph. Perek Aleph Mishnah Gimel. Chamisha Sha'arim Hayu L'Haravayit. There were five entrances to the Temple Mount. Shnei Shari Chulda, for the two Chulda gates. Okay? Shnei Shari Chulda. And that means the entrance and the exit gates. By the way, why is it called Chulda? Either because the prophetess Chulda, who spoke very emphatically about the centrality of the spirituality of the Beit HaMikdash, or we know because the British actually did archaeological work underneath the Temple Mount, this area, which is called, you know, again, I'm just using the terminology, Solomon's Stables, or other places, if you look underneath it, it actually weaves, kechulda, like a weasel. It weaves. So that's why some people say it's called the Chulda Gates. Okay? But the bottom line is, Mishamshim min kenisa v'yitzia. It was entrance and exit. Kupinis min hamarav. The Kupinis gate was the marav. That gate, by the way, if you go into the women's section, which not all of us can do, unless you go really late at night, and you know that there is an entrance place for the women's section on the inside, like an inside area? Right over there, if you look carefully, you will see a lintel, the beginning of a lintel that held a gate. That was the Kupinis gate, right? It's between what the Maghrabi gate is now, but that's right over there, the entrance into the women's section, inside women's section. Okay? Kupinis min ha-marav, mishamish k'nisa v'yitzitza. Teddy min ha-tzafon. There was a northern gate called Shar Teddy min ha-tzafon. Lo haya mishamish klum. It was not used at all. So why was there that gate? So if you look at the commentaries, they say that there was a person named Teddy who wanted to give a lot of money to the Beis HaMikdash on one condition, that a gate was named after him. So, what did they do? They named a gate for him, Shar Teddy. And Lo haya mishamish lo klum, I did this again. Lo haya mishamish lo klum, it didn't have any purpose. I'm sorry. L'hayim Mishamish l'kulam, it had no purpose. Okay? Shar Mizrahi. This gate right over here. Shar Mizrahi. Haya, I love Shushan HaBira. There's a picture of Shushan HaBira because of Achashverosh's permission. And this is where the Kohen would exit when he was involved in the Soref et HaPara, when he burnt the Para Aduma. Now what's interesting here is this is a model. This is not real. So what's interesting here is the eastern gate lines up perfectly the way it's supposed to in Halacha. But if you look at this eastern wall now, the Shar of the eastern wall, it does not line up. In fact, the Beis HaMikdash, let's say use the Dome of the Rock as our point, would be right over here, and the gate is like right over here. So the question is, I thought this gate is supposed to line up. If the Dome of the Rock is the location of the Bunker Beis HaMikdash, how come it doesn't line up? So there's a few different answers. One answer is the Dome of the Rock is not the location, and it's opposite this. And there's actually a pedestal that's as high as the pedestal in the Dome of the Rock that's called actually by the Arabs the Dome of the the Dome of the Tablets, that they say is where the Kodesh Kedashim is, and that the Kodesh Kedashim, that the Beis HaMikdash is more, what we would say is, it's more northern than south, where we say it is. Or the answer that I think is probably more correct is, this is all cemeteries. We've done no archaeological finds here. There's probably more than one gate here. And that the gate that we see now is not the Shar Mizrach, it's another gate. And if you did archaeological finds here, you would find that gate, but it would be a political nightmare to do archaeological finds in the middle of an Arab cemetery. I can't even fathom the challenges that you would have in order to try to deal with those issues. Okay? So that's that gate. Kol nichnasim l'harabayis, nichnasim derech yamin, makifim v'yotzim derech smol. Anyone who went into Harabayis went in this way, and this was the traffic pattern. Except for someone who was put in Cherim, or someone who was a mourner. And it says, Chutz mimi she'ira dover shehu makif l'smol, malucha makif l'smol, who would go the other way? Shani avel, an avel, hashuchem bebayit zeh, yinach mecha, should comfort you. By the way, the only addition that was ever added to the Beis HaMikdash was two offices in this gate, in which mourners, during their week of mourning, and Chasan and Kala during the week around their wedding, would sit in those two offices on Shabbos, And on Shabbos afternoon, the citizens of Yerushalayim would come up to the Beis HaMikdash and extend words of comfort or extend words of Mazel Tov. That is why, by the way, we have the minhag in our shuls, which are what? Mikdash Ma'at, miniature temples. We have the minhag that a chassan, we have an afruf. There's even a minhag amongst many that you dance the chassan from shul. That all comes based on the Ma'aril, the super commentary that explains the minhagim of the Jewish people. That, he said, it's all based on what happened at the Beis HaMikdash. That's why we also have the minhag of welcoming in the mourner and extending words of comfort to him when Shabbos begins, based on the experience that actually happened within the Beit HaMikdash also, and as the compass that should calibrate our shuls is consistent with the activities that happened within the temple itself.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, sure. You can ask me a minute.
Which one is the Shabbos Ramadan, and which one is the flam gate? Is it called the flam gate? Where you come out?
Well, the flower gate when you come out where?
No. What's the name of the gate where you come out into the cemetery?
Well, this gate right over here, Shara Mizrah, is also, it was called the Golden Gate also. It had many names
but
to it.
But the Golden Gate is what is closed up. Right?
Well, this gate is also, yeah, this gate's closed up. We don't go. You might be talking about the gate over here that you go into.
Where you come out.
That's a fairly new gate. That's a gate from the time of the Ottoman Turks.
Okay, so
it's only a few hundred years old.
So
we only do things that are at least 2,000 years old in this person. Okay? Yes. Right.
Are those Avelim of Shiva?
Yeah. I think Shiva, yeah.
So people left their house of Shiva?
Those citizens of Yerushalayim, and they would be recognized in there.
Just on Shabbos?
I think so, yes.
Why don't we say Shiva?
Because there's still no Indian, Aveus before Hesia and stuff like that, you're 100% right, but in the Beis HaMikdash, there were different laws regarding extending words of comfort. We know that this was the only gates that were added, that was the only thing that was added to the Beis HaMikdash, and that was these two gates. There may have been temporary additions, but no permanent additions except for that.
Today we say before Baruch anyway.
Yeah, right. It's the same idea. Yeah. Right. It comes from, and it's not just a nice drasha that it comes from here. All the commentaries explain it comes from there. By the way, this area over here, this is a picture of what we've been doing. This area over here, there's been a whole bunch of new finds, and these new finds are actually, if you look at source number two. There's two things I want to show you here, and source number two. In source number two, we're told about the migration of the Sanhedrin. Initially, the Sanhedrin, by the way, you can see, here's the gate. You see that here's the gate, the Easter gate? It does not line up. It does not line up with this entrance. There should be a gate right over here. But no one's going to do any serious archaeology there. So therefore, there are people who say that this is where the Holy of Holies was. Right over here, and the elevation of the stone structure underneath there is the same elevation as the stone structure underneath here. That's where that whole issue comes up. But getting to our point over here, initially the when the Sanhedrin was in the Beis HaMikdash, there was a special area where the Sanhedrin met. It was in the Beis HaMikdash, and it went through exiles, the Sanhedrin. So if you look at source 2, Rosh Hashanah 31a, Ukinegdam Gosa Sanhedrin, they were the exiles of Sanhedrin. What were they? Lishkas HaGazis L'chanut. It went, the first stop was Lishkas HaGazis, that's in here, to the Chanut. The Chanut is that area that I told you, that store. So it was Lishkas HaGazis right over here, and the first place it exiled to was over here. Now, what was the difference whether Sanhedrin was here or here? Once it was here, it could not adjudicate capital cases, which, by the way, is appropriate for this day of the year, because it removes the ability for the Jewish people to have condemned anyone to death at this period of time, because the Sanhedrin was only here. Then the Sanhedrin moved to Yerushalayim. Where in Yerushalayim? We think in the what's known now as the Cotton Gate. If you ever take a tour of what's called the Muslim Quarter, there's a Cotton Gate there, there's a Masorah, that's where the Sanhedrin was. I think it's a wonderful place to go. I think if you decide to go, you should go with somebody who knows the location. It's not exactly the easiest terrain to navigate, and you don't want to get lost. You don't want to get lost there. Now, getting back to this area over here, actually, in very, very recently, when I say recently, within the past 2 years, they actually found an interesting thing. If you look at the first page of our handout, I mentioned to you, it speaks about the various components of the various eras of Yerushalayim. If you look from 614 to 617, a short period of time, Persia conquered Yerushalayim. They gave permission for Jews to have control over the Beis HaMikdash, over the Temple Mount. Okay? From 614 to 617. We have found remnants of homes, and we have found coins with pictures of menorahs on them and other things of that nature, you know, that shows that there were actually Jews living here, and it's dated to exactly between 614 and 617. So this is the most recent find, and in case you want to look at it more, you can find the entry in the Times of Israel, again in Source 2, Gold Treasure Trove Unearthed at the Base of Temple Mount, Byzantine Era Coins and Unique Menorah Medallions Found by Hebrew University Archaeologists. This is exactly the area. And by the wall, we have walls here that are Jebusite walls. That means they're walls from the time of Avram Avinu. We have walls there. So you actually see here that the Jewish people, even after they were exiled with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, they still came coming back to Eretz Yisrael. It was always their place. They were always connected to that. And all around the Old City, we find from different periods of time. There's a whole new dig going on right over here, which is finding materials of all different generations. It used to be the parking lot across the street from Ir David. It's now no longer a parking lot. It's a full-fledged dig. You got to see this dig. It's unbelievable. But over here, I just wanted to point this out. Okay? Okay. By the way, since we mentioned this wall, the eastern wall, you should know that Herod extended the temple plaza, and we actually can see it in one place. We can see it, actually, that the southern wall was extended right approximately over here. We see what's called a seam in the wall. Like, for example, if this is the Mercy Gate, Shar Rachamim, we see a seam, which, by the way, is being pointed to right over here. You can see a seam in the wall that normally the stones are going this way, except for one seam. This is because this was Herodian added, and this was already still there from the first Beis HaMikdash. So we know that the Temple Plaza actually grew, and that this whole area over here was actually from the second Beis HaMikdash. The first Beis HaMikdash was more mitzumsam, was more contracted.
Was that additional space used for something specific, or just?
It was just a larger. Herod wanted to make sure it looked nicer, and there was a larger. There was a larger area for people to hang out. And that brings us to our next slide, and that is, since non-Jews were also permitted on the Makom Beis HaMikdash up to a point, that allowed that plaza also to be larger, and they were allowed up to a place called the Soreg. The Mishnah, if we look at source number 3, the Mishnah speaks about the idea that up to Lifnim Mimenu Soreg Gevora Asar Tfachim, there was a Soreg that gave a tent. It was a platform of a Asar Tfachim, and anyone could enter in, Jews and non-Jews, up to that point. After that point, you could only enter if you were Jewish. Now, you should just know that Josephus also indicates this, also found in source 4, where Josephus, in the Book of Antiquities, clearly indicates that there was this thing called the Soreg. Not that our Mishnah isn't enough, but I wanted to show that to you. And in addition, we have found from the second base of Mikdash warning signs, both Greek and Latin. We have found those signs. They were unearthed. They're found in the Hebrew University Museum. This is one example of a sign. This is another example of a sign. Okay? They were both in Latin and in Greek. Two different versions. You had to be, it's a multicultural experience. That's why Yeshiva University makes our students take more than one language. And by the way, there is a possibility, and I only stress the possibility, that we see based, if you hold that the Temple Mount, that the base of Mikdash is over here, is under the Dome of the Rock, you could see actually jutting out from the approximate distance it would be, you actually still see a platform that's there, and that platform you can still see right over here. So we actually, on the Har HaBayit itself, you can actually see part of the Sorek still. Now that doesn't mean in a month from now someone's going to remove that evidence.
What is the difference though between the two levels? Why is it
that one was the first level was non-Jews could come also and pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu there, and from that level only Jews could go. It's there are certain halachas regarding the Mishnah says very clearly. I'm not sure I can tell you the exact halachic issues, but the idea is there was a tiered system. The same way Kohanim were allowed in a certain place, or Levim were allowed in a certain place, and Israelites were allowed just in a certain place. Non-Jews were allowed onto the Beit HaMikdash, which is not true in all other religious cultures, that you allow people who are not, you have no interest in making them Jewish, onto your holiest of sites. They would allow them onto the holiest of sites, and you would, but they would only be allowed up to a certain point on the site. Yes.
The warning sign says, like, under the pain of death.
Yes.
Does that be the Shemayim? Do they
actually want people? Actually, my son asked me the same question. I told him I have no idea. I would assume it's, I assume it's B'day Shemayim. Mm-hmm. I've never seen Makoros that say it's B'day Adam. Yeah. Yes.
How literate were people back then? I mean,
that's why it's multiple languages. And I'm sure there was someone there also.
Okay.
By the way, it says. Multiple languages. You're right. I'm sure. Well, there were Kohanim and Levim stationed throughout the temple plaza in order to direct traffic and to serve not as guards from a security perspective, but guards from more of a respect perspective, like you see like in front of castles and things of that nature. Kohanim and Levim, and there was very strict protocols. They had to be awake. There's a Mishnah that speaks out that if they were sleeping, that you could burn their clothing and things of that nature. I mean, it was a pretty strict responsibility, but keep in mind, there was a changing of the guards. There was a Mishmarot, so you only did it for maybe 2 days a year, so you were very excited about doing it. But you should know, in source number 3, I didn't read it, but we can do it. It says that the Yevanim, in the time of Hanukkah, actually wanted to break this to show that non-Jews can come also into the Beis HaMikdash. They broke it in 13 different places, and even though it was rebuilt, that every if you pass by one of the places that it was built, that it was broken, you would actually bow there in recognition to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the miracle of Chanukah. Okay? Now, you had to also make sure, that you had there was a lot of the Kohanim needed to use mikvos. We know from the English, from Roni Reich, and from early English pre-1948, Wilson and others who did work, that we know of two structures for sure. These two structures that seem to be mikvos on the Temple Mount itself. We also know that there are two different aqueducts that we can still see remnants that brought water. One built in the time of the Hashmonaim, which is called the lower aqueduct, and one built in the time of Herod, the upper aqueduct, that even though the elevation grade was going up, they built it in a way. For example, when you walk down to the Kotel from the steps, like you go down from Yeshiva to Koto, and you go down those steps, and there is a turnstile, and it's where the temporary bathrooms are, the turnstile there. If you look behind there's a big wall. There's a big wall with a whole bunch of advertisements before you walk into the turnstiles. Is anyone? Did I lose it, everybody yet or not? No. You know what I'm talking about? Okay. You're by Yeshiva Hakotel. You're walking down. Six people are asking you for money when you go down, right? Then you pass the menorah. Then you turn, then you walk down those more steps, you help a few people with their carriages. And before you turn into that little security area, there's actually like informational posters about concerts and stuff like that. Peeking behind that is remnants of the lower aqueduct. If you walk in from Shar Yafo, and you go into Shar Yafo, there are taxis on this side, there's one store, two stores, there's a little street, three stores, and then you would turn by Migdal David over here. Behind that third store is a remnant pool from the lower aqueduct. Okay? That we know of, that we can see. Again, to look behind the advertisements for the aqueduct is great. To look behind that pool area, I did it because I was walking with my son, who's a sharpshooter in Golani. So therefore, I went behind there. But the bottom line is, I would not recommend going in that area alone. You want to make sure that you check it. But you can still see the indentations of the pool, because it was all made out of stone. Okay. Let's go to the next set of Makora. How much time do I have?
3 or 5.
Okay.
I
have enough material for like a whole day.
Two
okay, all right. So here's the choice. By a show of hands, we can do, because you might have done this already, we can do the western wall and stuff found over here, or we can do the lower city of Yerushalayim and the Gihon Springs and the broad wall. How many people would like the lower city?
Some of each.
Some of each, okay. All right, here's what we'll do. We're going to do what I plan to do. We're not going to finish it all, but please, God, Nechama, we'll do this as one of the Kol Medreshet Yom Rishon, because I have more than enough to do for another, all right, long period of time. Okay. I would actually like to skip to one piece, because I want to point out, because it's this stuff I have a feeling people have seen, and I don't want to just, I'm going to need your help again. Okay. This is on the western wall. This is the plaza of the. This is the 2,000-year-old street. You asked me where the nechassim or where you could buy here. Here were the little stores, the boutique shops. They were right in here. Okay. These are still stones that fell from the time of the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash in time of Tisha B'Av. Are you familiar with this? This is like the west, southwest area. Are you familiar with that? It's not the. It's part of the Davidson Center, but it's not really part. This is the whole area. This is actually where the egalitarian services actually take place. This is where they want to build the egalitarian kotel. Okay, I'm just giving you geographics. But that's not. And there's a lot of exciting pieces here. There are a lot of exciting pieces here. But here's an unbelievable piece. Josephus writes, and we know this, Josephus writes that when the Beis HaMikdash was being destroyed, Jews hid in subterranean caverns. And he writes that there was actually, they even bought like necklaces with them and other things of that nature. When this was all dug out, which took a lot of time, that was one thing. But they found, actually, from the lower city of Yerushalayim, the lower city of Yerushalayim, this is like where the Shiloach is, up to where the Beis HaMikdash is, they found, consistent with the aqueducts, they actually found sewer systems that took debris away from the Beis HaMikdash. And they found in those underground sewers, they found remnants from 2,000 years ago, from the time of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And more than that, Josephus writes that when the Romans walked on this road, and by the way, this is what I think about a Tisha B'Av. When the Romans walked on this road, mamish this road, they heard the Jews underneath there, hiding under the caverns. And what they did was, they broke the sidewalks, and they went and they killed the Jews by breaking the sidewalks. We have now not only found the sidewalks, we've actually found the places where they broke. We see that there are just these indiscriminate places where they're just shattered pieces, like the whole sidewalk is solid except for one piece. We not only see that, but we actually see underneath it where they found, again, remnants of women's necklaces and things of that nature. And I want to play for you, Arye, this has a click to it, like a... Yeah, just hit it. I did not do any of this PowerPoint presentation. I mean, I did the pictures, but someone set it up. All right, click on the Ynet piece. Yeah, click there. And then, can you just make it bigger?
Not sure why it's not playing.
Well, the advertisement's playing. Okay. I'm not going to... Arye, get back to the PowerPoint. Again, this will be available on YU Torah. You'll be able to click on it. You'll be able to see it. It shows you walking... I've walked the underground... How many people have walked the underground sewers? They just opened it up, right? So you've seen it. It showed you these underground sewers... And you can see the places. So you saw the places where it's broken, right?
And they didn't show
what?
I think we saw it different. I think it was on the Ir David.
Oh, the Ir David. That's something else. That's the Shiloah thing. No, he's... Now, why did I show you this? This is... This underground sewer goes all the way to the end of the Kotel. But they haven't dug that all up yet. But what they finished digging up exits right over here. So if you did... the underground thing, and you remember coming up on a very small stairwell by the western, by the corner of the southwest wall, you've done it. If not, you haven't done it. And by the way, most people haven't done it yet because it's very new. And also, there are a lot of times for a lot of reasons, because you're going underneath a whole bunch of different terrains, they don't always let you go in there. But it's an unbelievable thing to see. You mamish, and when you think about Tisha B'Av, and it speaks in Eicha about all, you know, even though the focus there is about the first base of Mikdash, and this is the second base of Mikdash, but you read the Kinos, and speaks about the slaughter, and the women that were hiding, and the men that were hiding, you mamish walk the path. It's mamish, you mamish can feel what the Kinos, you know, are talking about. So I would like to end with one piece, because I don't think we're going to be able to do justice to I would like to just end with one piece because I know my time's up already, but I'd like to just end with one piece. First of all, are you, by the show of hands, how many people are familiar with the Beit HaTikiah? Okay, that's... Sources 6 and 7. By the way, before I actually... I just want to look at source 5 for a second. I talked about the mikvahs and stuff like that. Someone asked a question about the community sacrifices, where the money come from, right? Source number 5, Shkalim 4:2, it actually speaks about the para, the sar mishtaleach, all those things came from the trumat halishka, the eimat mayim, and the cisterns that brought water to the Beis HaMikdash was also paid for by the communal tax that everyone paid. If you look at the next source of source 5, Yedayim 4:7, I find this to be extremely exciting source, and that is there's an argument between Siddukim and Perushim about what happens if an aqueduct is traveling through a Beis HaKvaros. If you have an aqueduct with water in it traveling through a Beis HaKvaros, does the water become Tamei or not? Why did they need to know that those laws? They need to know those laws because when you took water from the Gush Etzion region or other regions, sometimes what happened was it actually passed Beis HaKvaros. So the aqueducts, they needed to know what the halacha is with a stone encatchment, whether it was considered tame or not. Because if the water became tame, bringing it to the base of Mikdash did no one any good. The answer is that it seems like it's okay in certain situations. There's certain protocols that are required of how you have to set up the aqueduct, but we know that the aqueducts were set up in very significant ways, although I'm not aware of any aqueduct that traversed a cemetery, but the fact that the conversations in the Mishnah is just proving the points, because we know of the fact that of these two aqueducts, both the Herodian aqueduct and an earlier one that was designed by the Hashmonaim. Let me just conclude with one thing. When Chizkiyahu, we're going back to the first base of Mikdash, I'm just going to give a little bit of an overview here, and I won't go into any more detail. The development of Yerushalayim goes in a few different places. The first you have is the city of David HaMelech. Then you have the Temple Mount. And then what happens is, during the first base of Mikdash, the kingdom of Yisrael is destroyed, and there are a whole bunch of individuals who survive the destruction of Malchei Yisrael, and they move to the Judean areas, and therefore this area, the city of David, gets expanded into a larger area, and eventually with the second base of Mikdash you start to get into what we call the upper city. This area right over here, you see two unbelievable things. One is the Gihon Spring, and the fact that the Gihon Spring is something that the Gemara in Shabbos speaks about that Chizkiyahu did that they weren't in favor of. And the other thing that he does is that he creates a broad wall, and that is a wall that will protect them from the Assyrian king. This broad wall, by the way, you can still see in the old city. You can still see it. And the interesting thing here is, and with this we'll conclude, Yeshayahu, in source number 10, yells at Chizkiyahu. Yeshayahu was the prophet. He says to them, you have seen also the breaches of the city of David, that they are many, and you have gathered together the waters of the lower pool. What does that mean, gathered together the lower pool? You took the water, and instead of it being in the Gihon Spring, you redirected the water source. I know you. Secondly, is the other thing he says is, look what the other thing he says is, Vespate Yerushalayim Sefartem, Batitsu Habatim Levatzira Choma. You destroyed poor people's homes to build a wall that I told you didn't have to build. That's what he says. Here's the broad wall. You see this broad wall here? Look at this picture right over here. Yeshayahu says, and sure enough, you see the homes that were destroyed in order to build the walls. My point is that there's so much, we just touched the surface of it. There is so much, when you look at the halacha, when you look at Tanakh, and you look at archaeology, the hand-in-glove relationship between the two celebrates the idea of Netzach Yisrael Lo Yishaker. Thank you.
Use that chart in my mind.
So that's true too.
Or maybe someone has been a fortune teller.
But not just that, I was thinking to myself,
is there source material on this?
Yes, source material over here. Anybody need some cheese?
Hey, Sean Morrison.
How are you?
How are you doing? Good.
How are you? Good to see you.
You live here in New York?
In Montague.
Her brother lives here from Montague.
Yeah, I know. I know your brother.
Sorry.